including, as the New York Times has noted, Far Eastern Federal University, a stretch of superhighway ringing Moscow, and two troubled stadiums for the 2018 World Cup, including one in a Baltic swamp. After the last of these, reported the Times, Mr. Putin pinned a blue-ribboned state medal, the Order of Honor, on Mr. Agalarov's chest at a dazzling Kremlin ceremony. In view of all this, the Times called Agalarov a fixer for the Kremlin's toughest jobs. Not only did Putin award Agalarov Russia's Order of Honor, one of the highest honors any Russian civilian can receive, but the Kremlin builder received the medal, Putin's clearest possible imprimatur, just 10 days before Trump went into business with him. In June 2013, Donald Trump invites Aras and Emin Agalarov to join him at the Miss USA pageant in Las Vegas. Aras is a billionaire developer who does building projects for the Kremlin. Emin is an aspiring pop star. Emin was married at the time to the daughter of Azerbaijan's president, which had already put him in Trump's orbit, for Azerbaijani government officials are so notoriously corrupt that they habitually become deeply engaged in large domestic building projects. Trump had signed a big deal in Azerbaijan for an edifice to be called Trump International Hotel and Tower Baku in 2012. So when Trump met Aras and Emin in June 2013, the Agalarovs were implicitly able to help Trump bring not one, but two dream deals to fruition. The completion of self-branded towers in both Moscow and Baku. Trump knew, too, that if hosted by the Agalarovs in Moscow, the pageant would be held in the same development for which his new tower was slated. This juxtaposition of the pageant and Trump's ambitions in real estate and his ambitions in politics was evident in Trump's tweet announcing the Trump-Agalarov deal to bring the 2013 Miss Universe to Moscow. "A big deal that will bring our countries together," Trump wrote on Twitter. In Trump's press conference, he added that Moscow right now in the world is a very, very important place. We wanted Moscow all the way. One of the great families in Russia is our partner. Trump also quickly and quite publicly invited Putin to his pageant, seemingly confirming that in his mind this would be, in the flurry of activity surrounding his presidential exploratory phase, a Trump-Putin political event. Trump and the Agalarovs bond immediately. An unnamed veteran Western diplomat in Moscow told the Daily Mail for an article dated July 13, 2017, that if there are skeletons in Trump's dealings with Russia, Aras knows where they are. And if Aras Agalarov knows Donald Trump's skeletons, you wouldn't bet on Vladimir Putin not also knowing. In March 2018, Mother Jones painted a vivid picture of the Trump-Agalarov weekend in Las Vegas. At an intimate 20-person VIP dinner the night before the Miss USA pageant, Trump talked business with Michael Cohen, Aras and Emin Agalarov, Emin's British publicist, Rob Goldstone, who would later set up and attend the now infamous June 9, 2016 meeting at Trump Tower, and Ike Kavaladze, an Agalarov employee who would join Goldstone at Trump Tower in June 2016. After dinner, the group headed to a nightclub to watch performances featuring semi-nude women. While there is no public record of the specific acts performed that night, popular acts at the club include one in which naked college girls simulate urinating on a professor, and another in which one female stands over the other female and simulates urinating while the other female catches the urine in two wine glasses. According to Goldstone, Trump said to Emin as the two men watched provocatively attired women dance for them, "When it comes to doing business in Russia, it's very hard to find people in there you can trust. We're going to have a great relationship." On another night less than 5 months later, either Emin or an associate, depending on whether you believe a source who spoke to the Daily Caller or Trump bodyguard Keith Schiller's congressional testimony, would tell Schiller that prostitutes could be sent up to Trump's room at the Ritz-Carlton Moscow if he wanted. And Christopher Steele's dossier reports that that nocturnal visit did, in fact, come to pass, and that Trump requested the women sent to him perform acts of urination. Pictures on social media confirm that Trump maintained his relationship with the Agalarovs throughout 2014, with Emin boasting to Forbes in July 2017 that after November 2013, every time I was in America, in New York, in Miami, I performed at one of Trump's events. I visited his office and we stayed in touch. He stayed in touch with my father as well. They've exchanged numerous letters. It's been a great relationship so far. In Las Vegas in 2013, the Agalarovs promised Trump not only $20 million, but also, more important, an opportunity to meet with Vladimir Putin and the prospect of building a Trump Tower Moscow on the site where the 2013 Miss Universe pageant will be held. The Washington Post wrote on March 9, 2018 of Trump's 2013 trip to Moscow that when Putin didn't appear at the 2013 pageant, his absence created, in Aras Agalarov's words, a very complicated situation because I promised Trump he would meet Putin. Trump arrives in Moscow in early November 2013 with two U.S. business partners in tow, Alex Sapir and Rotem Rosen, whose ties to powerful Russians are substantial. He immediately begins conducting business meetings with bankers and other influential Russians who can help him and Aras Agalarov move forward with their Trump Tower Moscow project. Trump later said of the pageant after-party that almost all of the oligarchs were in the room, but he would not name them. He also said in a 2015 interview with Fox News' Sean Hannity that he doesn't want to say if he spoke to Putin in Moscow. This was out of character for Trump, who drops names when boasting about people with whom he has spent time. Trump has even been evasive about how long he was in Moscow, telling radio host Hugh Hewitt on Monday, September 21, 2015, that he spent a weekend in Moscow. But telling the New York Times on July 19, 2017, by the time the trip had become controversial, I went there for one day for the Miss Universe contest. I turned around. I went back. In a 2017 press conference, he went even further in insisting on the brevity of his contacts with Russia and Russians. I have no deals that could happen in Russia because we've stayed away, he said. Trump went to Moscow prepared in 2013. He brought with him Alex Sapir and Rotem Rosen, two New York-based developers who'd previously worked with Trump on Trump Soho in New York City. According to Washington Monthly, Alex's then-living Soviet-born father, Tamir, had ties to Russian intelligence. Rosen, then CEO of the Sapir organization, of which Tamir had been the founder, was also known as the right-hand man of Soviet-born Lev Levayev, whom the Israeli daily Haaretz has called a close friend of Putin. Just 2 days after the pageant, Sapir and Rosen reported to Real Estate Weekly that a lot of Russian people from the oil and gas businesses have come to us asking to be partners in building a product like Trump Soho in Moscow. In Trump's own discussion with Real Estate Weekly, he claimed that he was simultaneously in serious negotiations with not just one or two, but four Russian developers, only one of which was Agalarov, to build a Trump-branded tower in Moscow. In addition to meeting with Putin's permits man, Vladimir Kozhin, Trump also met with Hermann Greff, CEO of a state-owned Russian bank, Sberbank. The result was that on November 8th and 9th, 2013, Trump had the developer, Agalarov, permits, Kozhin, and money, Greff, he needed for Trump Tower Moscow all in one place. This enabled him to announce the Trump Tower Moscow deal prior to the pageant on November 9th. Trump's excitement over the agreement had hardly diminished by the time he returned to the States on November 10th. His first tweet post-Moscow on November 11th reads as follows. I just got back from Russia. Learned lots and lots. Moscow is a very interesting and amazing place. United States must be very smart and very strategic. Once again, Trump was seamlessly conjoining corporate and political rhetoric, his own interests, and those of America. Trump also had a public message for the Agalarovs on November 11th, which he likewise delivered by tweet. "I had a great weekend with you and your family. You have done a fantastic job. Trump Tower Moscow is next." The dossier also includes raw intelligence, meaning intelligence that hasn't been confirmed, on Putin's using proposed real estate deals in Russia to seal Trump's loyalty. The dossier of raw intelligence that the FBI's investigation of Trump-Russia ties now in part relies upon does discuss Aras Agalarov, though not by name. The dossier details Russian efforts to entice Trump toward pro-Russia policies through promises of future Russian land development deals, noting on its second page that the Kremlin's cultivation operation on Trump also had comprised offering him various lucrative real estate development business deals in Russia, especially in relation to the ongoing 2018 World Cup soccer tournament. However, so far, for reasons unknown, Trump had not taken up any of these. Agalarov was named on a Forbes list of the 15 Russian billionaires tied to the World Cup, noting that his Crocus Group was awarded $580 million in state contracts to erect two stadiums in host cities Kaliningrad and Rostov-on-Don. As for Trump's not accepting the offers referenced in the dossier, keeping in mind that he did indeed sign letters of intent in 2013 and 2015 to build a Trump Tower Moscow, one explanation for Trump's lack of engagement can be found in one of his earlier disengagements from a Russia deal. As reported by the Associated Press in 2017, Trump declined a chance to build the tower in Moscow in 1997 because he said he did not have enough money to renovate the property. Trump told Alexander Komenko, then assistant to Moscow's deputy mayor, "I'm really interested in this project, but I don't have enough funds, and I will need to look for outside investment." In the 2000s, see Chapter 1, Trump began licensing his name rather than becoming directly involved in new building projects, while at least once in Toronto claiming to be involved in building a tower when, in fact, he was only licensing his name to it. So any decision to turn down Kremlin-proffered opportunities in Russia in the 2010s could have been the result of Trump being a licensor rather than a builder because of a lack of capital. Forbes also noted five additional Trump-linked Russian billionaires who had World Cup projects. Viktor Vekselberg, who reportedly is tied to an investment firm that paid Trump's attorney Michael Cohen $500,000 between January and August 2017, specifically into an account Cohen used to pay off Trump's former girlfriends and mistresses, and Mikhail Friedman, German Khan, Alexei Kuzmichov, and Pyotr Avin, who, per Forbes, citing the Steele dossier, worked with the Kremlin to influence the 2016 presidential elections. Friedman, Khan, Kuzmichov, and Avin control Alpha Bank, a member of whose advisory board, Richard Burt, co-wrote Donald Trump's first foreign policy speech, now known as the Mayflower Speech, and thereafter continued to work with the bank's co-founder, Mikhail Friedman, according to Politico. According to the Washington Post, after the pageant, there was a glitzy after-party in a Moscow nightclub. Trump, energized, worked the room. Trump would later claim that all of the oligarchs attended, which wasn't true, but the room was certainly packed with influential Russian nationals. And the day before, he had indeed been with powerful Russian businessmen, including Sberbank's Gref, called a longtime ally of President Vladimir Putin by Bloomberg. A longtime friend of Trump's, actor Tom Arnold, bolsters Trump's claims of having spoken to Putin indirectly and directly, saying he has knowledge of a speakerphone call between Trump and Putin on November 9th at the Ritz-Carlton Moscow because it was witnessed, he will say repeatedly on social media, by NBC executive Chuck LaBella and others. Per Arnold, Putin called Trump at the Moscow Ritz in November 2013. Trump put it on speakerphone for everyone to hear. Putin congratulated Trump on Trump Tower Moscow and encouraged Trump to run for president and offered Russia's support. It's all on tape. On November 11, 2013, Yulia Alferova, then wife of well-connected Russian billionaire Artem Klyushin, posted on Twitter a picture of herself standing behind Donald Trump as Trump, seated at a small table, looked at something on a computer screen. To Trump's left was Emin Agalarov, son of Trump's billionaire business partner Aras Agalarov, already well known for being Vladimir Putin's go-to real estate developer. To Trump's right was billionaire casino mogul and Trump friend Phil Ruffin, while over Trump's left shoulder, Trump bodyguard Keith Schiller hovered. Over his right shoulder were Alferova and an unidentified man. It is unknown what, or given allegations made by Trump friend Tom Arnold, who was on the computer screen. Alferova's tweet was captioned, "Waiting for your business in Russia to start, Mr. Trump." She added hashtags for Russia and Moscow and directed the tweet to Trump's and Emin's attention by using their Twitter handles, @RealDonaldTrump and @EminOfficial, respectively. In January 2017, Arnold made the startling accusation that Trump spoke with Putin via speakerphone, whether through an actual phone or via a desktop computer application is unknown, at the 2013 Miss Universe pageant, that others had heard the call, and that the call was incriminating. On January 9, 2017, Arnold tweeted @Trump that Chuck LaBella, NBC talent development executive, was not only listening on speakerphone when Putin called, "You lied to 60 Minutes, by the way," but he knows everything else, and just in case, Putin filmed it all. In mid-2018, Vice News, convinced that Arnold has substantial knowledge of Trump's private dealings from his years of friendship with him and Apprentice producer Mark Burnett, announced that Arnold would star in a program entitled The Hunt for the Trump Tapes, to premiere in September 2018. Arnold has since been pictured with Trump fixer Michael Cohen, now known to have a large number of audio recordings of the president. Arnold argued in his January 2017 tweets that his intention was not to harm Trump's political career, stating, as noted by the International Herald Tribune, "There is a sex tape of him from Moscow in 2013 from when he was over there for the Miss Universe pageant. I wish that he would release it because I don't care. I wish he would say, 'Putin has this over me. Here's what it is. Okay, now it's out. Now he, Putin, can't talk about me. Okay, I'm gonna do what's best for America. Because something is up. Something happened there. I want to help him so he can do what's best for our country and the men and women who serve our country." LaBella has not discussed Arnold's allegations with the media for reasons that may be connected to Trump's one-time fixer and attorney, Michael Cohen. In April 2018, CNN reported that Cohen, then Trump's attorney, had directed LaBella to retain Keith M. Davidson as an attorney in response to Arnold's claims. Davidson is best known for helping adult film actor Stormy Daniels negotiate a hush money payment from Trump when she had information Trump did not want disclosed. Whether LaBella plans to speak out about what he saw in Moscow is uncertain. LaBella has told the Irish Examiner, however, that "Donald is an incredible man, and I mean that sincerely in a positive way. He has been very good to me over the past 10 years personally and professionally. I've learned a lot of unique lessons from him." Trump has given different accounts of the reported speakerphone call with Putin, telling journalists at the National Press Club on May 27, 2014, that he spoke to Putin directly and indirectly. However, it is LaBella who could state unequivocally whether the phone call took place. Arnold has kept the pressure up on both Trump and LaBella, tweeting on October 16, 2017, "Trump loves Chuck LaBella. I'd kill if a reporter asked DJT about him. Chuck can confirm the existence of the pee-pee tape and Putin call and apprentice-slash-Miss Universe pageant filth. Arnold had previously alleged in public tweets that apprentice producer Mark Burnett was in possession of tapes from apprentice recording sessions on which Trump could be heard using racist and misogynistic language. This allegation of Trump using racist language has since been repeated by former Trump advisor Omarosa Manigault Newman. Beyond Aras Agalarov's promise to Trump that he could meet Putin, Trump's summer 2013 letter to Putin and tweet about Putin pre-pageant, and Trump's subsequent claims to have spoken to Putin indirectly and directly, his interest in meeting the Russian president is underscored by his choice of entourage in Moscow in November 2013. One compatriot during the trip was Bob Van Ronkel, an American expatriate who has lived in Moscow for many years and specializes in getting Hollywood talent to travel to Russia. Van Ronkel's specific skill is selling Hollywood stars on the idea that they can get rich by doing business in and with Russia. That Van Ronkel is good at his job is underscored by the fact that the front page of his website features several photos of him with Vladimir Putin. Van Ronkel and Putin became friendly in part because the former does a great service for Russia by bringing the world's biggest celebrities there. He also sought to make a TV show about the KGB in 2001. On August 13, 2001, the website of the Association of Former Intelligence Officers noted that producer Bob Van Ronkel is currently putting together a multi-million dollar television series tentatively titled Files from the KGB. The series is planned to be filmed in Russia, and it will use an almost all-Russian cast to show the world the swashbuckling adventures of one of the world's most feared intelligence agencies. This time, however, they won't be the cruel psychopaths of Cold War movies or the megalomaniacs of James Bond films. The series will be in the style of television series such as La Femme Nikita. On his website, Van Ronkel lists among his November 2013 accomplishments the following four. Attended a private event with Steven Seagal. Drinks with Donald Trump during the Miss Universe competition in Moscow. Entertained owners of Dick Clark Productions and Mandalay Entertainment, Alan Shapiro and Peter Guber, who were in Russia for the Miss Universe competition they were producing. And dinner with Chuck LaBella, Vice President of Talent Relations at NBC Universal and the partners of Miss Universe. The latter three events occurred at the 2013 Miss Universe pageant. It's unclear if Van Ronkel met with his client Seagal at the pageant or elsewhere. In either case, Seagal, a friend of Putin's, is now both a Russian citizen, an honor bestowed upon him by Putin at a widely publicized Moscow ceremony, and, as of 2018, Putin's special envoy to the Trump administration. In 2013, LaBella was an NBC talent development executive. He'd also been involved as producer in several Miss Universe pageants, 2010, 2011, and 2012, and a judge in several others, particularly Miss Teen USA pageants. LaBella's role with respect to the 2013 Miss Universe pageant is unclear. IMDb doesn't list it at all for him, but other sites say he was a producer for the 2013 edition of the show, just as he was from 2010 to 2012. Per IMDb, he worked on 5 episodes of The Apprentice with Trump in 2013. Arnold claims LaBella was also NBC's liaison to Trump during the pageant. NBC co-owned the Miss Universe pageant with Trump at the time, and was therefore, Arnold alleges, with him for any incriminating behavior that may have occurred during the trip. Chuck LaBella was there and knows all, Arnold tweeted out on October 16, 2017. In 2015, BuzzFeed published significant details about Van Ronkel's Moscow operation, establishing that his job was not just to get stars like Trump to Russia, but to be certain they understood that doing so could lead to business deals with Russians and lots of money. BuzzFeed described Van Ronkel as taking credit for bringing numerous celebrities to Russia and mentioning in interviews with American media large sums of money flowing to the celebrities whose trips he facilitates. Speaking of Steven Seagal in particular, Van Ronkel bragged to BuzzFeed that Steven has been offered commercials, film roles, and is working on all kinds of other interesting business deals in Russia and with very many interesting people. Van Ronkel, BuzzFeed noted, even runs his own acting school in Moscow. Van Ronkel didn't just attend the 2013 Miss Universe pageant, but he also had drinks with Trump and had a meeting with him. Pictures available online show him sitting just 6 seats from Trump during the pageant, immediately beside Yulia Alfierova and Artem Kyushin. At one point, he had his picture taken with Trump. That picture of the two men side by side and smiling is also available online as the splash page photograph on Van Ronkel's professional website. Other celebrities photographed with one of Hollywood's chief conduits to Russian audiences include Katy Perry, Kanye West, Russell Crowe, Angelina Jolie, Jack Nicholson, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Kevin Costner, Snoop Dogg, Jared Leto, and NBC Universal executive Chuck LaBella. If Trump didn't see any of these photos prior to connecting with Van Ronkel in Moscow, he may have since seen a July 14, 2017 article in Financial Times crediting Van Ronkel with having introduced several Hollywood celebrities to Mr. Putin. The British media outlet not only added that Van Ronkel had attended the 2013 Miss Universe pageant as a VIP, but that he had even worked on the pageant itself. In speaking to Financial Times, Van Ronkel said that Trump looked bored at the 2013 pageant after-party in Moscow. Yet Van Ronkel told Vice News something quite different. According to Vice, when Russian pop star Emin Agalarov hit the stage at the 2013 Miss Universe pageant in Moscow, Bob Van Ronkel sat watching his longtime acquaintance, Emin, from the front row. There, a few seats away, sat the pageant co-owner, Donald Trump. Later that night, Van Ronkel wound up at a vodka-soaked after-party with Trump, Emin, and Emin's billionaire father, Aras. Trump was shaking hands and meeting anyone he could and trying to do business, Van Ronkel says. After promising that he will attend the pageant, Putin suddenly chooses not to do so. Why didn't Putin go to the pageant? There are as many answers offered to that question as there are reporters who've pursued it. The Daily Mail said Trump arrived in Moscow too late for the anticipated meeting with Putin because his plane was delayed in North Carolina. The Guardian wrote that the Trump-Putin meeting mysteriously fell off Putin's schedule a few days before Trump arrived in Moscow. Mother Jones said a Moscow traffic jam was to blame, while the Washington Post said it was a meeting between Putin and the King of the Netherlands that ran long. Trump himself would later claim to Fox News that the meeting did, in fact, happen, though he was light on the details, and Putin, for his part, has claimed he didn't even know Trump was in Moscow that month. In December 2013, just over a month after his return from Moscow, Trump begins formally reaching out to influential Republicans on the subject of a presidential run, which he predicts in conversations with politicians in New York will begin in 2015. Within 45 days of returning to the United States from Moscow, Trump had already met with influential Republicans to discuss a possible run for governor of New York in 2014, according to the New York Times. During one such event, he was given a 4-page document by an upstate assemblyman that had a section entitled Springboards to the Presidency. The Times noted that that document section was written with the particular interests of Mr. Trump in mind, given that, per an examination by the New York Times of contemporaneous documents and emails, as well as interviews with people who met with Mr. Trump during that period, he measured whether the governor's office was a necessary stepping stone to his long-held goal, the White House. His calculations in December 2013 run contrary to the seat-of-the-pants image he projects on the campaign trail and offer a look at a formative stage of his presidential ambitions. The Times added that Trump's intentions were serious, inasmuch as he actually discussed with state Republican leaders the idea of using the governorship as a platform to run for president, a situation in which he would serve for a year before running for the 2016 Republican nomination. "He made it clear in December 2013 he wanted to run for president," said Manhattan's Republican Party chairman when contacted by the Times. In another meeting that December, this time at Trump Tower, Trump told Republican leaders he did not think the country could withstand 8 years of Hillary Clinton, and that he wanted to save the country. At one point in December 2013, Trump boosters met with him with the necessary documents to register a presidential exploratory committee in hand. They also brought a notary public to the meeting. Trump has said that, "Even then, in December 2013, what I really wanted to do was run for president." In February 2018, Trump tweeted that, "I didn't know I was going to run in 2014. The Trump-Agalarov letter of intent will remain active, according to Aras Agalarov, for 3.5 years, a period covering the entirety of the presidential campaign. It expires only on Trump's inauguration, according to a February 2017 statement to a Russian construction website by the elder Agalarov. On February 2, 2017, Agalarov announced that the Trump Tower Moscow project he and Donald Trump had signed a letter of intent to pursue in 2013 was dead. Popular Russian online journal Construction.ru announced the project's death in an article entitled "Russians Abandon Plan for Trump Tower Construction in Moscow Region." The article quoted Agalarov as saying his letter of intent with Trump had expired not because Trump had been elected president, but because, as Agalarov put it, Trump had decided that as president, he couldn't do any deals. Agalarov's statement confirmed that Trump had operated under one letter of intent for the entirety of his presidential run, Trump-Agalarov, and a second letter of intent, Trump-Rozov, from October 2015, 3 months into his presidential run, until May 2016 at the earliest, see Chapter 4. As Yahoo News would report in May 2018 of the Trump-Rozov letter of intent, "Prosecutors and congressional investigators have obtained text messages and emails showing that as late as May 2016, around the time Trump was clinching the Republican nomination, Cohen was considering a trip to Russia to meet about the Trump Tower Moscow project with high-level government officials, business leaders, and bankers. Given statements across multiple decades by Donald Trump and Donald Trump Jr. about how real estate deals get done in Moscow, both of these tower deals would have depended upon the generosity of Russian officials." However, in a mid-2017 Forbes interview, Agalarov's son throws even this expiration date into doubt, revealing that the Agalarovs are still in negotiations with Trump's sons to do additional business, possibly including the building of a tower in Moscow. Emin told Forbes that, "During our discussions, Trump ran for president, so we dropped the idea of a Trump Tower Moscow." However, Emin was also so candid with Forbes about both what those discussions entailed and whether they in fact survived Trump's announcement of his presidential candidacy that he later tried to retract the portion of his interview referencing a 2013 letter of intent between his father and Trump. Pre-retraction, the younger Agalarov told Forbes that "we, Trump and the Crocus Group, had actually signed some non-disclosure documents at the time, in 2013, just to establish the relationship on a different level. But if Trump hadn't run for president, we would probably be in the construction phase today because he's a great person, very trusted on our side." echoing his father's implication in 2017 that the Trump-Agalarov-Trump Tower Moscow letter of intent was still active in 2015, Emin, when asked by Forbes, "Do you think there's any possibility you might pick up those conversations about Trump Tower Moscow with Eric or Donald Jr.?" responded, "Yeah, we are in contact with both." The response suggested that Trump had instructed neither Donald Trump Jr. nor Eric Trump that they were in fact prohibited from doing any foreign deals while he was in office. Indeed, according to Emin, the Trump boys' delay in responding to several post-June 2015 proposals by the Agalarovs, for instance, working with a manufacturer of furniture in Turkey and building a building together in Moscow, was only because after their father's 2016 election, Don Jr. and Eric hadn't realized who is handling what, how, and when. On March 29, 2014, Yulia Afierova retweets Trump three times in succession, with all three tweets on the subject of the Agalarovs' new business partner running for president. According to both Emin Agalarov and Donald Trump Jr., the Agalarovs and Trumps are still planning a Trump Tower Moscow at this point. By Trump's own public admission, as late as Election Day, he didn't believe he would win the presidency. He thought that as of November 9, 2016, the day after Election Day, he'd return to being a non-political private citizen, free to do big international business deals without hindrance. According to Michael Wolff's Fire and Fury, a week before the election, Trump told the former head of the Fox News channel, Roger Ailes, that losing the election isn't losing. We've totally won. Wolff wrote that Trump appeared to his aides to be horrified when things started breaking his way on election night, almost certainly thinking that his grand plans for a Trump Tower Moscow would have to be put on hold. Former congressman, current MSNBC host and longtime Trump friend, now Trump enemy, Joe Scarborough, said in August 2017, after having been in contact with Trump for much of the 2016 campaign, "Donald Trump never thought he was going to win the presidency. This was all a money-making scam. He was going to take the money and run. Let me use the position I'm in right now and try to get that tower in Moscow." When Trump won on November 8, 2016, in addition to publicly expressing his surprise, he, for weeks, resisted any attempt to shut down his business dealings at home or abroad. To this day, he has not divested himself of his business interests, almost certainly aware that the commitments he made to Agalarov prior to the election can be restarted more readily if he takes no appreciable steps to distance himself from the business entity, the Trump Organization, that made those commitments. Chapter 3. Kompromat. November 2013. Summary. When Donald Trump arrives in Moscow for the Miss Universe pageant in November 2013, he checks into the presidential suite of the Ritz-Carlton Moscow. That night, he is allegedly surreptitiously recorded asking multiple women to urinate on the presidential suite bed President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama had slept in on their trip to Moscow. Multiple active-duty CIA officers responsible for the case file on this incident, speaking to the BBC's Russia correspondent through an intermediary, say that the recording does indeed exist. BBC reporter Paul Wood reports that at least one allied European intelligence agency has the same information. These officers also tell the BBC that there is at least one other recording of Trump of a sexual nature from a different location, St. Petersburg, and a different time. Any such recording would be considered national security endangering kompromat, potential blackmail material, if it is now in the possession of the Kremlin. Numerous witnesses in contact with British media confirm individual elements of the Ritz-Carlton allegation, which was originally published by BuzzFeed in January 2017 as part of a 35-page dossier of raw intelligence now known as the Steele dossier. The facts. Donald Trump arrives in Moscow on November 8, 2013, for a full day of business meetings. A number of Russian businessmen attend the meetings. Among them is Artem Klyushin, a Russian billionaire whose close friend Konstantin Rykov will post on social media the day after the 2016 election that he and Klyushin were part of a campaign to get Trump elected. Rykov runs Dasuk, a website that functions as Moscow's largest brothel. At one of Trump's first meetings, a Russian attendee, possibly Emin Agalarov, possibly Artem Klyushin, or a third person, tells Keith Schiller, Trump's bodyguard, that if Trump wants, a group of prostitutes can be sent to his room at the Ritz-Carlton that night. According to Schiller's testimony to Congress in November 2017, he declines the offer and tells Trump about it immediately. The two men laugh about it, Schiller testifies. That night, Schiller, as he normally does, stands outside Trump's door. After a few minutes, however, he goes to bed. Trump is aware, by his own subsequent admission at a January 2017 news conference, that his room is likely filled with clandestine recording equipment and that he must be careful about what he does there. Schiller tells Congress that he could not say for sure what happened during the remainder of the night. According to the dossier compiled by former MI6 agent Christopher Steele, using Russian intelligence sources he developed during his time as head of the Russia desk at the British Intelligence Agency, as well as local Moscow sources and American sources alleged to be close to Trump, prostitutes were sent to Trump's room on November 8, 2013, and the room was being recorded. The dossier cites for this intelligence several of the staff at the Ritz-Carlton Moscow, as well as sources D and E. The dossier sources allege that, to show disrespect to President Obama and his wife Michelle, Trump asked a group of women to urinate on the bed in the presidential suite that the Obamas had slept in during a prior official visit to Russia. Over the course of the next year, there will be reports of witnesses who saw a row in the Ritz-Carlton Moscow lobby between hotel staff and a group of women who wanted to go up to Trump's room without signing in. Paul Wood of the BBC, in an article for The Spectator, will say he was told by an unnamed source that a hotel employee and an American tourist saw the row happen. In October 2017, an editor at The Guardian will contact this author to say that The Guardian has heard there are witnesses to a confrontation in the hotel lobby when security wanted the girls to sign in and DJT, Donald Trump, objected. One witness is a former Trump Organization employee. The editor adds that The Guardian source is a trusted one, but two layers away. She talked to a top Republican who talked to the witness. Her understanding is that the witness had talked to the FBI and given an interview to a local paper that never printed it. There is speculation, after the Steele dossier is published by BuzzFeed in January 2017, that Belarusian businessman Sergei Milian, born Sergei Kukuts, is both Source D and Source E, a claim made unlikely by the dossier's contention that Source E confirmed raw intelligence provided by Source D as to the incident in Trump's hotel room. Shortly after the dossier's publication, Paul Wood reports that a retired spy told him in August 2016 that an Eastern European intelligence agency had confirmed the existence of a tape of the Ritz-Carlton incident. Later, Wood writes, I used an intermediary to pass some questions to active duty CIA officers dealing with the case file to determine whether the intelligence community credits the allegations. According to Wood, he received a response through that intermediary that there was more than one tape of the then president-elect with audio and video on more than one date and in more than one place, specifically Moscow and St. Petersburg, and that the material in all instances was of a sexual nature. The day after BuzzFeed publishes the dossier, the Kremlin calls the dossier's findings a complete fabrication and utter nonsense. Trump cites the Kremlin's response nearly word for word, calling the dossier a complete and total fabrication, utter nonsense, and adds, I have nothing to do with Russia, no deals, no loans, no nothing. He then compares America to Nazi Germany, and himself to a victim of Nazi oppression, writing on Twitter, intelligence agencies should never have allowed this fake news to leak into the public. One last shot at me. Are we living in Nazi Germany? Defending himself against the allegations, Trump claims that it would be impossible for him to watch a third party urinate on a bed because he is a germaphobe. Yahoo News reports in April 2018 that Trump told FBI Director James Comey at a January 27, 2017 dinner that he never slept overnight in Moscow, a claim that is later found to be false. The Washington Post reports in January 2017 Trump's contention that he would never have acted inappropriately in his hotel room, writing, the president-elect professed an awareness that the hotel rooms he visits overseas may be bugged with tiny cameras. At a press conference the day after the dossier is released, the president says, when I leave our country, I am extremely careful. I'm surrounded by bodyguards. I'm surrounded by people. And I always tell them, be very careful, because in your hotel rooms, and no matter where you go, you're going to probably have cameras. He adds, I would certainly put Russia in that category. Addressing specifically the possibility of being caught on camera doing something compromising, Trump says, I always tell my bodyguards and entourage, I hope you're going to be good anyway. But you better be careful or you'll be watching yourself on nightly television. I tell this to people all the time. Trump's claims of cautious behavior in Moscow are challenged by a pre-dossier interview on Hungarian television in which a former Miss Hungary, Kata Sarka, says that Trump approached her shortly before the 2013 Miss Universe pageant and propositioned her for sex in his hotel room at the Ritz-Carlton. Another of Trump's defenses against the allegations is that he would never sleep with a prostitute. Karen McDougal, a former Playboy playmate, says that the first time she slept with Trump, he tried to pay her afterward. According to a January 2017 Daily Caller report, an unnamed former Trump advisor's initial defense of Trump contended that it was Emin Agalarov who raised the matter of prostitutes and did not offer them so much as tell Schiller they would be sent. The same former advisor said that there were multiple people guarding Trump's door all night. In his testimony to Congress, however, Schiller will say that it was a Russian or Ukrainian person, not Emin Agalarov, who made the offer, and that the only person assigned to Trump's door that night was Schiller himself, who left the door unguarded for much of the night. Emin Agalarov himself denies the allegation that he arranged for prostitutes and claims that Trump could not have been with prostitutes at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock a.m. on November 9, 2013, because at 7 o'clock a.m. that day, he was filming part of a music video for Emin as a favor. However, Trump himself says he sometimes sleeps as few as 3 hours a night. In January 2017, Stanislav Belkovsky, a Muscovite who is the director of the National Strategy Institute in Moscow, a sometime freelancer for publications such as The Guardian and The Moscow Times, and a host at independent Russian network TV Rain, tells the Daily Beast that prostitutes around Moscow say the golden shower orgy story is true. In July 2017, independent journalist and surveillance expert Andrei Soldatov, while accompanying CBS's Stephen Colbert on a sweep of the presidential suite bedroom in which the Steele-reported recording was allegedly made, tells the Daily Beast that Colbert and I looked for surveillance cameras behind the large mirror in the presidential suite, and to our astonishment, we discovered an electric cable which could not have any clear purpose, as the mirror had no electronic illumination. According to the New York Times, Russia has a long and well-documented record of using kompromat to discredit the Kremlin's foes and to lean on its potential friends. For decades, at least 60 years following the end of World War II, Hotels across the former Soviet Union visited by foreigners were equipped with bugging devices and cameras by the KGB. Experts on Russian hospitality industry tradecraft say that historically, interesting foreign businessmen are put in a handful of rooms in the hotel in which they are staying that are wired for sound and video. In March 2018, the former CIA director John Brennan tells MSNBC that the Kremlin may have something on Trump personally. "The Russians, I think, have had long experience with Mr. Trump and may have things that they could expose." In April 2018, former FBI Director James Comey, one of the original recipients of the Steele dossier in 2016, tells CNN, "I don't know whether the current President of the United States was with prostitutes peeing on each other in Moscow in 2013. It's possible." When Vladimir Putin is asked in Helsinki, Finland, whether the Kremlin has a tape of Trump from his November 2013 stay at the Ritz-Carlton Moscow, he does not deny the existence of such a tape. Instead, he says that he was unaware Trump was in Moscow at the time. Noting that there are too many high-level, high-ranking businessmen coming to Russia to try to collect compromising material on all of them, he adds that, "When Trump was a private individual, a businessman, nobody informed me that he was in Moscow in November 2013. Please disregard these issues and don't think about this anymore again." On August 10, 2018, Robert Baer, a former CIA case officer and an intelligence columnist for Time, tells a crowd at an event in Colorado that prior to the release of the Steele dossier in January 2017, he spoke to a former KGB officer who told him, "We have a tape of Donald Trump." While, according to Baer, the Russian didn't say when the tape was recorded or what it depicted, Baer concluded, after the Steele dossier was published, that whether the tape referenced by the ex-KGB agent was from 2013 or not, based on the dossier's allegations and his own familiarity with Russian intelligence operations, the Agalarovs are KGB, FSB agents. Annotated History. Donald Trump arrives in Moscow on November 8, 2013 for a full day of business meetings. A number of Russian businessmen attend the meetings. Among them is Artem Klyushin, a Russian billionaire whose close friend Konstantin Rykov will post on social media the day after the 2016 election that he and Klyushin were part of a campaign to get Trump elected. Rykov runs Dosug, a website that functions as Moscow's largest brothel. Konstantin Rykov is a member of Putin's political party, previously serving in the Duma, is one of the Russian leader's most trusted confidants, and is widely considered by journalists and Kremlinologists as a member of the propagandist arm of the Putin government machine, according to Washington Monthly. Public Radio International noted his expertise in clickbait messaging, viral communication, and digital technology, and referred to him in May 2018 as the man who taught the Kremlin how to win the Internet. He also, according to a 2016 Daily Dot article entitled "This Darknet Brothel Makes Finding Sex as Easy as Hailing an Uber," founded Dosug, now the largest brothel in Moscow. Rykov created a pro-Trump website, Trump2016.ru, in 2015, and published a pro-Trump endorsement just a few weeks after Trump's surprise announcement of his candidacy for president that June. Pictures and text from Klyushin's Twitter account suggest Klyushin attended a Trump rally in Iowa later that year. In a March 2016 Reuters article, Rykov, who is well known in Russia and among American journalists as a pro-Kremlin blogger and Putin supporter, is quoted as saying, "Trump is the first member of the American elite in 20 years who compliments Russia. Trump will smash America as we know it. We've got nothing to lose. Do we want the grandmother Hillary? No. Maybe it's time to help the old brigand, Trump." The dossier sources allege that to show disrespect to President Obama and his wife Michelle, Trump asked a group of women to urinate on the bed in the presidential suite that the Obamas had slept in during a prior official visit to Russia. At one hotel in former Soviet Republic Estonia, according to the New York Times, during the Soviet era, 60 of the hotel's 423 rooms were bugged and reserved for interesting persons like foreign businessmen. Guests who were judged vulnerable to blackmail were put in a handful of rooms with holes in the walls through which special cameras would film dalliances with prostitutes. All the prostitutes worked for the KGB. In a conversation with FBI Director James Comey in early 2017, Trump allegedly said that Putin told him in Moscow in 2013 that Russia had some of the most beautiful hookers in the world. The comment echoes a letter Trump sent to Putin in the months before he went to Moscow, in which Trump had added a postscript indicating that he looked forward to seeing beautiful women during his trip, according to the Washington Post. As noted by CBS's Stephen Colbert when he traveled to the Ritz to investigate the allegations in the Steele dossier, Trump stayed in the nicest room in the hotel, the presidential suite, while in Moscow. In July 2017, Colbert rented out the room Trump had stayed in and videotaped his discovery of an unexplained power cable dangling from a section of the bedroom wall that was hidden behind a non-illuminated mirror. Colbert would later recount for Conan O'Brien on the latter's show Conan how, "I actually looked behind the mirrors of the presidential suite room where they supposedly had filmed this happening, and there were electrical wires going into a mirror." As for the motivation behind the acts Trump allegedly observed and/or engaged in at the Ritz-Carlton, reports suggest that Trump has hated Obama ever since Obama made fun of him at the White House Correspondents Association dinner in 2011 in front of the most powerful and influential figures in American media. According to a September 2015 article by Adam Gopnik in The New Yorker, Trump's humiliation was as absolute and as visible as any I have ever seen. His head set in place like a man in a pillory, he barely moved or altered his expression as wave after wave of laughter struck him. There was not a trace of feigning good humor about him. No head bobbing or hand clapping or chin shaking or sheepish grinning. He sat perfectly still, chin tight, in locked, unmovable rage. According to the Washington Post, reporters for major news organizations say Trump was so humiliated that it triggered a deep, previously hidden yearning for revenge. Over the course of the next year, there will be reports of witnesses who saw a row in the Ritz-Carlton Moscow lobby between hotel staff and a group of women who wanted to go up to Trump's room without signing in. Per Paul Wood, a Russia correspondent for the BBC at the time he filed his report, an American Ritz-Carlton Moscow guest alleged that prostitutes went up to Trump's room. As Wood wrote in an August 2017 article for The Spectator, Steele is not the only source on the Ritz-Carlton Moscow tape. I heard of Russian compromising material on Trump from two sources months before the Steele dossier came to light. There are reports of witnesses in the hotel who corroborate Steele's reporting. These include an American who's said to have seen a row with hotel security over whether the alleged hookers would be allowed up to Trump's suite. Besides the minimum two hotel witnesses he referenced, Wood also directly or indirectly received information from intelligence agency contacts who confirmed Steele's reporting. As Wood wrote for the BBC on January 12, 2017, in an article entitled Trump Compromising Claims, How and Why Did We Get Here? Steele is not the only source for the claim about Russian compromise on the president-elect. Back in August, a retired spy told me he had been informed of its existence by the head of an East European intelligence agency. Later, I used an intermediary to pass some questions to active-duty CIA officers dealing with the case file. I got a message back that there was more than one tape, audio and video, on more than one date in more than one place, in the Ritz in Moscow and also in St. Petersburg, and that the material in the tapes was of a sexual nature. Steele's dossier offers us another person who could corroborate the alleged events of November 8, 2013. According to Steele, a Trump friend described as being in his early 40s, either Felix Sater, Russian-born Republican strategist Boris Epstein, or most likely of the three, Sergei Milian, knows that a P-tape exists. Steele doesn't allege this witness spoke directly to him about